Bloomberg Surveillance with Ken Pruitt and Tom Keene. On demand via our Bloomberg Radio Plus app. Free for iPhone and Android devices.
Douglas Holtz-Eakin, he's now at the American Action Forum. And thank you for joining us this morning, Doug. I presume that your position would be, please listen to this man when he testifies today.
Yes, I completely concur with the notion that a failure to raise the debt ceiling is a dangerous economic move. There's a lot of talk about how the Treasury could prioritize interest payments and thus not really default. And I think there's some real questions about whether they can operationally do that in real time. But even if they could, I think it sends exactly the wrong signal to world capital markets. If you make interest payments, but you don't pay Social Security, you don't pay your highway bills, you don't pay your education bills, anyone looking at a borrower who cannot meet all their financial obligations is going to be unlikely to conclude that they're riskless and charge them a low rate. We'll see rates go up, and that'll damage the economy.
Yeah, Lou takes note of those on Capitol Hill in the Tea Party who have said it might be good for the U.S. economy if we defaulted.
I understand that politicians often stake out extreme positions at the outset of a negotiation in order to increase their leverage. But I would hope that no one sincerely believes that having a sharp shock to interest rates is a good thing for the U.S. economy.
Now, the Treasury Secretary does dodge the question of what they will do if they don't reach a deal. He brings up the whole question of prioritization, and all he kind of says is, why would we do that if we pay debt holders first, then we won't be paying other people, and we might shut off Social Security payments. But he doesn't say they can't do it. Is that, you think, the fallback position for Treasury in an emergency?
Well, I think there are a couple different angles to this. I mean, one is the mechanics, as I mentioned, whether they can or cannot. They're probably not going to comment. The second is their legal standing in prioritization. They've never really been given statutory authority to prioritize. Neither does it appear that they've been barred. And rather than speculate on the legal standing, I think they're just saying nothing. And in a crisis, they'd probably do the best they could, and that would be that. But there's also a third angle to this, which is pure politics. And I think it would be an extremely unpleasant moment for the Secretary of the Treasury to say, yes, it's very important for us to pay the Chinese, but not our seniors. So they're trying to stay silent on everything.
That seems to be the best strategy for him. But if you were asked, if you were in his position and they said, Secretary Holtz-Eakin, what would you do? What would you tell him? Because that question is going to come up.
I think you would say, look, we will not know the cash on hand. We can't. It fluctuates day to day. The outflows fluctuate day to day. And I will be forced to make judgments in the instant. And I would ask that you not put me in that position, because those are not judgments I'd like to make.
All right. Now, the U.S. The markets are up this morning, as I said, because there's talk of a possible short-term extension. You've been through these kind of negotiations before. If they were to do a month or 6 weeks, can they come to a kind of grand bargain, or are we sort of in fantasy land?
I don't anticipate a grand bargain. Grand, of course, is in the eye of the beholder, but you know, the president has consistently asked for $1 trillion in new taxes over the next 10 years. That's simply not going to happen. And so, on the other side, the will likely success be scaled back as well. I'm pleased to see that the positions are softening. We've had a president said he's not going to negotiate. He clearly now is. We've had a majority leader in the Senate who's done essentially nothing and is now at least meeting. And we've seen the House change its position considerably, moving away from a focus on Obamacare to core budget issues. That's all good news, I think. Now we just have to get a deal. Because deals really do take a long time, it would be sensible for them to buy a little breathing room for with a short extension and then hammer this out.
You know, they're not funding the D.C. government, which is causing them to lose revenue. So we sent Tom Keene down there to try to spend a little money, and he is with us now. Tom, I know you want to get in on this. You've been observing a different kind of Washington.
It is a very different kind of Washington. Doug, I know you've been fighting the battles down here for years, but I've never seen anything like this in my life. Folks completely focused on, yes, Janet Yellen, but the events in the United States completely taking over the IMF meetings. Doug, we're starting to see the short-term paper markets begin to move. There's a fear out there. How critical is market observation to the fiscal experts in Washington?
It's very important. I think everyone knows that In a perfect world, political leadership, leads us to make moves and get policies right. But market fear is more powerful. And if the Republicans and Democrats alike take a look out at financial markets and see movements against the U.S. and danger to the economy, that'll really, I think, heighten the need to get the deal done quickly, and that would be a good thing.
You know, I look, Doug, at the back and forth in the day-to-day down here. We've shifted from the Affordable Care Act to, I think, a broader budget discussion. Has that surprised you?
No, not at all. In the end, one part of the discomfort with the Affordable Care Act is the fact that it's a new entitlement, and we've not done any real meaningful entitlement reform on the existing entitlements. The Social Securities, Medicare's, Medicaid's, farm bills, and the like, all have deep financial problems that have been left unaddressed. I think in terms of tactics, it's been quite clear that Republicans are supported by the public on policy, but they don't like the idea of shutting down the government to get there. So they've shifted off the Affordable Care Act, and they're back to core budget issues where I think they have a broader base of support.
Yeah, you look at the broader base support and the Republicans today. What would be your advice to Republicans? You've supported Republican politics. What would be your counsel to Paul Ryan and John Boehner this morning?
My counsel would be get a deal as quickly as possible. And I think there's a clear deal just sitting out there to be had. The tight spending caps and sequesters have really harmed the Democrats' domestic agenda. You could trade more discretionary spending for longer-term reductions, particularly some really sensible reforms to Medicare that will get you $250, $280 billion over the next 10 years. So up front, you get a little relief. You get more than that in deficit reduction. That gives you room to raise the debt limit. That's not a big deal. That's not a grand bargain. But that's funding the government, raising the debt limit, and moving off.
Are we dealing with entitlement reform, a completely different thing?
I think the core of this will be essentially to do small-scale entitlement reform. We're not going to get major changes to Social Security. I'd be surprised if they touch that at all. But there are some things one could do within the existing Medicare program. It's got a hospital and a doctor's insurance separate. They could be unified into a single policy with unified copays and deductibles. That's a better, more modern insurance policy. It's also would save the federal government a bit of money over 10 years. And that kind of small-scale entitlement reform, I think, will be the focus.
Yeah.
That's about all you can hope for, given the timelines and the big divisions in the parties on what needs to be done.
Doug, I look at all this. My head is spinning. I mean, absolutely spinning about where we've been in the last 10 days. If this is a normal budget debate, which I think it is, and everything said, why are we shut down? Why are we having a default if we're back to budget 101?
Well, we've been through this exercise before over pure budgetary issues, in 2011. These things tend to run up to the last minute, and so I'm not truly shocked by that. The only real difference this time was the emphasis on Obamacare, and there I think the Republicans just missed a lesson in history. In 1995-96, the public 100% agreed with Republicans on the substance, on the policy of budget deficits, but they fundamentally disliked the strategy of closing the government. In 2013, the public 100% supported the notion that Obamacare should be delayed or in fact, eliminated in some cases, but they 100% disliked the idea of shutting the government. So they misplayed that hand, and they've changed the topic to deeper budget issues.
You know, the Republicans are also saying that every time there is a debt ceiling or a debate, they have negotiated changes to spending levels. But Lou points out in his prepared testimony that's not true. In your experience, have we been through this a lot of times without having to go through this kind of thing?
A clean debt limit increase is the exception rather than the rule. And it's typically a short-term increase. In most instances, Republicans and Democrats alike very much dislike voting for a pure increase in the debt limit without something that accompanies it and says, honest, really, we want to get this under control. And that's what gave us Grandmother and Hollings. It's what gave us the Budget Control Act in 2011. And it would be my expectation we'd see something like that yet again.
Doug, when you look at all this, how long is the shutdown going to last?
Well, I think it'll run into next week as they try to sort out how to raise the debt limit on a short-term basis, or hopefully get it done entirely. And then in one measure, they will raise the debt limit, fund the government, and move on.
Douglas Holtz-Eakin.
Bloomberg Surveillance, weekday mornings at 7 Eastern. In New York on Bloomberg 1130. In Boston on 1200 AM and 94.5 FM HD2. Or on Sirius and XM Satellite Radio Channel 113. Copyright 2013 Bloomberg LP.